This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Happy Friday, everybody. We are coming in hot. We've been throwing commentary at each other for the last couple of hours. We thought maybe we should record a podcast. So here we are back with you. Thanks for joining us as always. If you haven't already, would you do us a favor and actually rate and review this podcast? Share it with a friend. This is the way people find it. We still get emails of people saying, I just was looking for a car podcast and just found you guys because you were up in the top 10. We greatly appreciate it. It's entirely due to you guys. So if you haven't rated and reviewed, we would appreciate it.
A little bit of Hooked on Driving travel up front. We've been reminding in the last couple of episodes, Todd is going to the Laguna Seca event on Friday, April 5th.
Yeah, he will be there.
Five and six, that's right. So he'll be there, but we're splitting up duties. I'm bringing Chance to Sebring International Raceway on April 5 for the one-day Hooked on Driving track day there. That is our Southeast Regional owner, Steve, there.
Very cool.
And then we'll be traveling up to New Jersey Motorsports Park on April 6 and 7 for the weekend track day. That's a two-day event at New Jersey Motorsports Park, and we're going to host a Cars and Coffee on Sunday, April 7th from 9 to 11 a.m. at New Jersey Motorsports Park in the paddock. Come on into the park and you will be directed where the Cars and Coffee is.
I'm a little jealous of you going to that, actually. Honestly, it's going to be very cool.
I'm looking forward to that. So it'll just be me and Chance will be floating around. He'll be taking photos as well. But please come out, say hello if you're in the area. And we know it's a long drive for many of you in that area.
It's like an hour south of Philly, right?
It's an hour. It's 90 minutes south of Philly, just about straight south. But it's an area where there's a lot of you enthusiasts, and we know that. And we want to meet all of you. So if you can make it out, I would love to meet you, love to see you. And then, Todd, you'll have to get back out there. We'll have to get to another East Coast track day.
We definitely will. We're going to try to visit all of our regions over the course of this calendar year. And this was just an opportunity for us to divide and conquer. So we are. We look forward to seeing as many of you show up. And we just want to get people on track. I just want to see you, period.
Genesis has announced the Magma program, adding a new dimension to Genesis. It's expanding into the realm of high-performance vehicles. And they're aiming to develop a high-performance Magna model for each production vehicle in the existing lineup, but it's not supposed to be like AMG. According to Luke Donkervolka, it's not supposed to be just like the high-performance. It's more of a luxurious GT. And to quote Luke, it is like wearing a fur coat inside out.
I read that too, and I was like, that's the quote we're going with?
I don't know what that means.
That's the quote?
That's what you're going for?
Because what you're telling me is soft and warm. That's what you're telling me is. Soft and warm.
Yeah.
But I don't know that...
I mean, the animals wear the fur on the outside.
They do. I don't know that the performance brand, the first thing you should feel is soft and warm. I think at that point, you know what you wind up with? You end up with Lexus F-Sport.
Yes, which... I wonder if they're going after that market.
Maybe, yeah.
But AMG still covers that market, and it's still higher performance. I think Genesis needs to focus on some sort of balance between an AMG and their N Hyundai line of performance vehicles.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the mix. Genesis doesn't need to do the N line. They don't need to be suddenly a luxurious, expensive vehicle, and we're doing
Time Attack. Yeah, sure. Time Attack with a person in the executive back seat. That's what I want to see. That'd be great. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a whole new series of racing. But they need to do something in between because they've established the Genesis as truly a competitor for luxury and the N brand over at Hyundai. So some kind of balance between the two, I would like to see that. But they've brought out the GV60 in a Magma color, the Magma concept. It's elevating everything we know about the Genesis brand. It's actually pretty cool looking, and I do like the orange.
Yeah.
It's a little hot. What that car is intended to be. It's a little bit hot, so I can see what he's saying in that sense. But I do like starting with the sedans, but their concepts, as we have determined in prior episodes where we've been going through the best of series, a lot of great concepts coming out, but they are all kind of GT concepts. So I can see the Magma brand applied to those GT concepts to make them hotter, a little bit hotter.
Well, Kurt Meyer actually asked on Facebook. We have more questions coming later, but he actually asked on Facebook, what do we think of the magma-ing of Genesis or Genesi?
Magnifying.
Yes, exactly. He said he likes the color they're using to denote performance. I want to be clear here, Kirk. This is the advertising launch color. If they do this, they're not going to only be available in orange because the problem is they won't sell enough. So this is going to be available in every color with the possible exception of like the MDX Type S is available in that Tiger Eye Pearl. I don't think you can get it on any other one. They may have like a unique color, like the N brand has that matte eggshell blue that you can't get on anything else. So they may do that kind of thing, but they will also be available in all the normal colors because they know most people will not buy a performance car in something crazy. I hope they offer the orange, but I don't think that's going to be exclusive.
Would be interesting.
I don't think it'll be the only color. It might be exclusive to Magma, but it won't be the only thing available.
And also, good news from Maserati, the MC Extrema is being released. This is the track-only version for gentlewomen and gentlemen drivers of the MC20, with the engine making 720 horsepower, 538 pound-feet of torque, with a six-speed sequential transmission for fun, for track days.
Speed and power was not the problem with that car.
It
wasn't having trouble. That's
what I
find
weird.
That was
the issue.
That wasn't the issue. The issue was brake calibration. Anyway, sorry.
Aero will be a nice thing.
Yes,
but
for sure.
I
of course,
admit
yeah.
to wanting to, not only to drive one, but I could see this being, you know, the track toy. And that's what Maserati is tapping into. Only 62 are being built. Mm. I don't know why they settled on 62, but
I'm sure somewhere deep in their history, there's a reason that 62 resonates. Porsche's
probably
the best at this, of digging out some obscure thing out of an article written 40 years ago and be like, that's where it comes from.
Probably.
So I'm sure Maserati has that.
It could be the Ferrari thing where they figure out how many people could and would buy our model. Okay, 500 people can afford it. We'll make $499.
Yep, exactly.
That's
right.
How they always thought. So maybe Maserati's taking a page out of that book, but I do love the styling of this thing. I'm all in for the
fan,
Extrema.
Yeah.
I'm ready to see this thing on track. I know where they could bring it to tracks.
Hooked on Driving?
They could call us.
They
Just could. Go to
hookedondriving.com. Let's do a Hooked on Driving promo. Why not?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Springtime is here, and good news, everyone. Ceramic liquid wax is now available. It's the most durable liquid wax Griot's has created to date. Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer renews faded trim. It's good for tires, too, and repels water, chemicals, dirt, and UV rays for weeks. Don't forget Foaming Glass Cleaner. That's new, too, which is a professional strength formula for fast, streak-free cleaning. Finally, there's pre-measured car wash pods, so you get the right amount of soap when you use a hose and bucket. It works with foaming cannons and foaming sprayers, too.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Our first car debate is from Alex in Philadelphia. Hey, by the way, you're in Philadelphia. Come on down to New Jersey Motorsports Park and actually see Paul and Chance coming up in a little over a week. We hope you do that. I love the title here, though. Alex is shopping for a new car, and there's lots of reasons why, but the title chosen was "The Dog Prefers an Automatic."
The dog takes precedence in the car. We've never really had that
it's
before.
It's possible for the dog to be a major consideration. I will say that as the multi-dog owner.
The dog's preferences?
One of our current dogs right now still doesn't figure out that the car is not a punishment. The older dog, Wasatch, is like, let's go to the car. Let's do that. The younger
there's
dog
a reward
is like,
at the end of dog park or well,
but he, but,
a bike
but
ride or something.
I've also
right?
taken just sometimes just running errands. Let's get out of the house. I'll roll the windows down, get your brain thinking. I'm happy to do that.
Right.
The younger one is kind of cowering in the middle of the car like, is this a bad thing? Should I like this? The older dog is like, yeah, get my head out the window. Let's do this. So the dogs matter. I get it. But apparently the dog prefers an auto.
Alex wants a commuter car. That's automatic since he's a realtor in the Philadelphia suburbs and he's stuck in traffic going to appointments. He said it's not as exciting in his 2018 manual Honda Accord.
I can see how that would get tiring for sure. Yeah.
This is the largest car he and his wife have. So it ends up being the road trip car for them, including the dog and maybe another adult. There are no plans to add kids to the mix, and the dog prefers an automatic because it offers a smoother ride.
The dog might like a CVT, but anyway, we'll come back around.
Alex is looking at the 2022 Kia Stinger GT2.
Yeah, you are.
As for, he is.
That's a good one. I like it.
I like the choice. As for a daily, he would prefer to get all the bells and whistles that come with it, and the interior feels better than the GT1 or lower, along with the standard tech and not looking old in this day and age. But he asks, are there other sporty and GT-feeling sedans, wagons, or hatches he should be cross-shopping besides a 4 Series or an Audi A5?
Hmm.
The lack of power and the higher cost of maintenance for those cars in his area leave him thinking that it's not enough of a difference to buy the competition over the Stinger.
The Stinger is a lot of car for the money.
It really is great. I think a late model GT2, that's the sweet spot. But another thing that has surprised him with these cars, they're known for being hard for dealers to sell, and people publicly on record saying they bought the GT2 with a sticker of 50 for $37,000 new. Now, the used ones have asking prices 30 to 40 with around 40,000 miles, and we're starting to get past the COVID car crazy prices.
Yeah.
We're still feeling it in some models and in various areas, but he says it seems like their values could be hit hard, knowing they were the less popular seller from Kia. Knowing the reputation of the Stinger, he initially thought most of the cars would be $30,000 tops for used ones, but as he started to shop, he says, I've got a budget of cash and then trade in the Accord for $38,000 total. I'm going to spend more than that, Alex, but I think it will be worth it.
Okay, good. But he's actually surprised at how much the Stingers have held their value, and I think it's because the people, they're one of those cars that you've either know exactly what they are or you've never heard of it. And the people that want that, like yourself, Alex, there's not a lot of other things in the market. So that's why they're hanging on to their value. I think it was a smaller market than Kia hoped for. And I also think Kia at the time, think about this. The Stinger was released before the Telluride.
True. Yeah.
I think the Stinger really suffered from, that's a Kia, more than the stuff since the Telluride. The Telluride was such a watershed moment in people's perception of what a Kia can be, even though it's not the same market segment at all.
Not at all.
But I think that really changed the perception. Plus, I hate to say it, but performance sedans are tough to sell. So the 1-2 punch of that, performance sedan, which not everybody's looking for, and then from Kia, that was the perception. Now I think Kia, or you know, KN if you look up the logo wrong, I think it's
which
become
it's not exactly
it's,
backwards
it's, it's become a brand where people will take it seriously. But if the Stinger showed up now, I'd be curious what it would do.
I was wondering, do you think the Stinger would have benefited from Telluride first out the door?
Yes.
Or would have Telluride have kind of been suspect to that? That's a Kia? I'm not sure.
I think the Telluride reset so many people's perception on Kia.
Yeah.
That's the first car I can
ours think included
of from Kia that was selling above MSRP, which I hate, but dealers were able to get it.
But on the other hand,
people were lining up for them because MSRP, they were good. Yeah. And I think if it had come after, it might have been different.
Alex's current daily driver gets used when they take long road trips, usually without the dog. The dog is not a fan of the shifting, hence the preference for the automatic. And they have one or two adults in the back seat from time to time, or Alex is the gear hauler and his wife hauls their friends and family in her Civic for trips when they need two cars.
So you and your wife haul everybody? Nobody else has cars?
Yeah, why are you guys doing all the driving?
Is there nobody else with a car that can help?
Is there no one?
Exactly. Anyway, onward.
Answer the call?
Well, but what's crazy is they do tons of stuff. They water ski in summer. They camp in the spring and fall. They snowboard in the winter. They're taking themselves and gear. They're doing projects around the house. Plenty of stuff going on. So having a large car is helpful. The Accord has been that. But apparently the Civic gets pulled out for let's haul friends as well duty.
Does the dog approve of all this driving that you
guys do? Apparently, the dog goes in the Civic. That's what I'm hearing
here.
So. The dog's in the Civic.
Alex says he generally ends up getting close to the EPA city gas mileage in the Accord when he does work, since he's going from house to house with clients. They drive separately, but it does take him some great back roads where he's got a heavier foot. He doesn't mind paying premium gas prices since there's not of a difference in pricing from regular. He says he's got a Cayman, an 07 Cayman. He takes that to work.
That's a good twist.
Yeah, it is a nice twist. He's used to the gas mileage that gets, and if he's worried, he's close to New Jersey, where gas is cheaper than in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
In the summer, they're driving 3 hours one way to the beach with the dog. The dog approves.
Of the beach.
It's the beach.
Not the car, but anyway.
They load up the car with beach gear, and they're there most weekends. They also go there for Christmas. They need space, the space of the Civic and the Accord to haul gifts, people, baked goods.
Who all are you hauling? Why are you the taxi service?
How much baking are you doing?
I am confused as to why you are all of the above. Anyway.
Length of the Accord trunk with the seats laid down on the height of the Civic's trunks have saved them a few times from needing to rent a truck. How much cooking and baking are you doing?
Well, and how many people are you transporting? Yes, you need to start your own private little Uber service, apparently, because people are using you, man.
He says he's probably leaving cars off the list, but at the end of the day, he wants to get something that doesn't make him feel like he cheaped out on what he's driving and has lots of practicality to it. A car that does things great, does most things good enough, and few flaws.
All of this is fascinating, but then Alex gets into his must-have list.
Automatic, where's the dog on this list?
Yeah, automatic, ventilated seats, Android Auto, decent cargo space or a hatch to be able to fit tall items, comfortable front seats for someone good-sized, memory front seats since he and his wife both drive the car, sportiness, not sluggish, and will not leave him stranded from random things breaking. Very
the people and the baked goods need to get there.
Yeah, well, yes, and the dog has a limited amount of time it wants to be in the car, clearly, yes.
He wants paint that's actually a color, red or green.
Love it.
Launch control, just to experience a car that has launch control.
Okay.
Modern infotainment, paddle shifters, less than 60,000 miles, but he's flexible on that. The Civic and the Cayman are currently both in the six figures on mileage.
Love it, okay.
And maintenance costs that are less than the Porsche.
That can be accomplished, yes.
He's got that 07 Cayman S on the list, along with two Accords, a 350Z, an Explorer.
Lots of cool stuff he's got.
And
lots
a couple of
varied
bikes.
Stuff. Yeah.
A couple of GSXRs, wow. He's also trying to get his bachelor party this summer to go to one of the Hooked on Driving events in his area. That's fantastic.
That'd be very cool. That's the first time we've heard of that, and we think that is a fantastic activity for bachelor or bachelorette parties, for that matter. Come on out to an event. That'd be great.
Bring it. Alex, thank you for writing. Really appreciate it. I do have a lot of choices for you.
Okay.
And I've noticed in your Honda ownership that you are probably amenable to having another one suggested to you. Mm-hmm. But it isn't a Honda. It's Acura.
Okay.
I'm starting out with the car that I think you should buy, but it doesn't quite fit.
Which
is the Integra Type S. The problem is it's only a manual.
Yeah, and it's above his budget. But yes, it's a great choice.
It's me we're talking about.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
I want you to get something that you really love. I'm taking into consideration, what if you do take clients? And have you been avoiding taking clients because of your 2018 Accord manual? Have you said, well, I'll just meet you there and you go ahead and drive yourself and we'll just meet? What if people want to ride with you? What if you want to start doing showings and you take people in your car? It does matter, and it does say something about you. And I think an Integra Type S would be perfect because it's kind of lift-back hatchy. It would have plenty of space for dog, for people, for goods, all the cooking.
It is still a manual, though. That is a problem. I take your
point. It's manual. Yeah. So then I went looking at the TLX Type S, and it's a big car, but the problem is the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how tall you are. We don't know your sizes, but if you are smaller in stature, then there could be humans that fit in those back seats behind you. It's still got a big trunk, and it does everything else that you want it to.
It's actually on my list. The TLX Type S, or even the base TLX, if you can't get the Type S, they're both very, very good to drive. Excellent to be in. Of course, we're bigger guys. Alex says he's a bigger guy. You aren't going to have much space behind you in the second row.
No, you're just
not. So it's going to be more like a 2+2.
But I wish that car had better.
But you are going to have doors for everybody.
Yeah, true.
And who are the people you're taking? Here's a question. Can the dog sit behind you? So the leg room isn't an issue.
Uh-huh.
And then the passenger, you said a lot of times it's you and your wife and another person and the dog. So the other passenger sits behind your wife. Your wife sits in the passenger seat. You drive and the dog's behind you. That actually would work.
And the trunk's full of stuff.
Beach gear, apparently.
I guess.
The TLX is an excellent car to drive. The TLX Type S is superb and overlooked. And one of the reasons we don't recommend it more is, why doesn't this have more backseat space?
The size of the car notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
The Integra is a smaller car, and it has more backseat space.
Yes, that's
so
a problem.
It's not like you couldn't have made more backseat space
in this
large car. But if none of those are in consideration, I'm still sticking with Acura. You just talked about it at the top of the podcast. It is the MDX Type S in Tiger Eye Pearl. Mm. Buy one slightly used. You will add 30 to 40% to your budget, but you will be rocking a rather powerful, rather spacious, and it can do everything in one. Everything you're talking about, dog, adults, stuff in the back, beach gear, all the food you can eat will be in the MDX.
Yeah.
And it's the Type S. It drives well, paddle shifters, great color. It's interesting, great tech. It impressed the heck out of me. MSRP was $73,000, Alex.
Yeah, it was.
But I'm not suggesting a new one. I'm suggesting go use autotempest.com to find an MDX Type S. I'm not the biggest fan of the regular MDX. It's a different engine.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked that Type S.
Type S was very good. I'll give that to you. That's good.
Others on my consideration list are the Genesis G70.
It's
upscale Accord.
Oh yeah, big time.
And the backseat space is not the greatest on that car either, but you guys aren't back there.
It's true.
It's the dog.
You're right, yes.
People in your life.
Big step up from the Accord, for sure.
I have two more for you to consider. I think you need to at least look sideways at them, if not go drive them. Okay. I would like you to just go drive them because I want you to have the Mercedes experience.
Oh, okay.
The first one that will add 30% to your budget is the GLC 43, the AMG GLC 43. I want it to be 2020 and newer, ideally 2021 and newer, but you can find those in the $40,000 to $45,000 range with not too many miles. Smaller is that CLA 45. I really liked that, but it is a smaller car.
Yeah,
if you're rocking an AMG, then you're... potential clients, your customers are going to want to ride with you.
Interesting point.
Lots of power. The GLC 43 is an excellent. It's not everything the MDX Type S is, I feel like, in terms of everything you get.
Sure, sure.
But it's not as expensive as the MDX Type S and slightly used. Okay. Like as I was finding them for 40, just some just under 40 and some, the, you know, the really lower mile ones and the really newer ones. I want you to have the updated infotainment, the updated interior. And I was finding them for 45. They weren't 50. So
interesting.
Strong consideration there. And I go SUV simply because of your needs. If you didn't have the people in your life, but just you and your wife and the dog, I'd say CLA 45.
Good. Excellent stuff. Great stuff. I actually have some different choices. We didn't overlap much on this one, even though the TLX Type S was on both our lists. You're talking about 38 to 40 grand, Alex. So let me go roughly in that range. I'm going to say, I have to say it. You mentioned the G70, Paul, which is a good one. I'm going to mention the alt that I always mention, the Alfa Giulia. Come on now.
Could he go quad?
I don't, maybe, maybe. Here's the thing. How much do you want to stretch? The Quadrifoglio is a superb car, but I'm talking not that. I'm talking get the limited slip differentials with the Q4 all-wheel drive, and you could do anything you wanted in that car. And then it still looks really classy. And it's beautiful. A fantastic place to be.
Yeah.
And you would enjoy it if the road got twisty at all. You'd love that car. So the Alfa Giulia.
Which it does. Apparently he's got some good B roads.
I totally agree. You've said you were a little concerned about BMW or Audi maintenance. Frankly, I'm no more concerned about the Giulia. It's a bit of a wild card on maintenance, I understand. But again, everyone we've known that's actually had one has had very good luck with them, including people that rented them on Turo, which is like the worst possible place for your car to be reliable. So I do want to say the Alfa Giulia. Also, your budget, because you want an automatic, gets you a Chevy SS. The auto's the key there, because the autos are less expensive.
Yeah, true.
This is a car with a good amount of space, front and rear, good amenities, large trunk with a Corvette engine. Chevy SS is one of my other ones. And then I have two wild cards, because something else dawned on me in the middle of this email, Alex. You have a Cayman. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You drive it to work occasionally. You drive it on fun drives. So you have fun car solved. You have fun event car solved. Yeah. Everything you're actually asking for, even though, I mean, the premise of the show is for you to like the car you're in every day, but everything else you're asking for, it doesn't need to be sporty at all.
True.
You need utility. You need enjoyment in the cabin and space.
True.
So I have two for you.
And Escalade V?
They get even more wild card because I can't believe I'm even going to recommend one of these.
Okay,
but I think it works, Alex. The
I'm
first
ready.
One I want to say is, look at Volvo V60s. That is the wagon of the 60 series. That's going to be the best interior of everything we've talked about.
It's a sweet looking car too.
It's a great looking car. You don't see very many. The interiors of the Volvos right now are killing it.
Yeah.
That is going to be the adventure interior of just, I just want to be here. You're sitting in traffic in Philadelphia and the V60 is going to be the least stressful in traffic you've ever been.
It's true.
So the Volvo V60 for that reason, that is going toward luxury. And then you know what? You've said friends, dog, skiing, summer, beach, camping, Christmas gifts, snow. This is the perfect place, I hate to say it, for the Subaru Outback.
That's true.
You need an
Outback. He does have the fun car. The Cayman is the salve in the wound.
You have the Cayman. Your wife has a Civic that she likes. You need something that the dog is happy with. A CVT might actually please the dog. I hate to say it. The Subaru Outback is not fun to drive. But I will say this. We make fun of them because they are a plague here in the Rocky Mountain region. But I will say this. Every single time we're sent a press car, I walk away from the Outback going, why does no other wagon on the planet sells? Because that just works.
It does.
It's not a car I would buy, but every time I see one, I'm like, I understand what you did. You bought a car that does everything you ever need it to do because you're not worried about fun. Alex, you have fun. You need everything else. And as much as it pains me,
that's
the Subaru Outback is the right car for you.
That is painful.
They've made them for so long, you could find one exactly like you want. They'd actually make it in a cool green and an actually a decent blue. Please don't get a white one. Please don't get charcoal gray. Those are the ones that are the real plagues.
We beg of you.
They make a really good forest green color. They make a really good deep blue on the Outback. And both of those look, for Outbacks, pretty darn cool. The problem is there's way too many, okay?
Yeah, agreed.
And they aren't designed to drive performance-wise, but they're perfect for everything else you need. So maybe for the first time in nearly 900 podcasts, I am recommending a Subaru Outback.
If you let your dog's preferences determine which car you're going to buy next, please write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, for your Topic Tuesday's car conclusions and your dog's car debates, apparently. Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
Josh C. has nothing good to drive.
Whoa, we got to solve that.
He's been a gearhead his whole life. But 10 years ago, after their first child was born, he traded in his 2010 GTI for a silver Subaru Forester and went all in on practicality. He was excited to have an appliance for a car and not something he felt like he needed to handle with care. His previous cars of note include two GTIs, a 2000 and a 2010, and a 1990 Integra LS. Then they bought a 1992 SR5 Toyota pickup a few years ago, and that's been functioning as the second car. They like both cars for what they are, but the Forester is starting to see the mechanic more frequently, and the truck is not an excellent second car, despite the extended cab. And now with two kids under age 11, and while they can all jam in there for a short trip, it feels unsafe and not reliable enough because it's now got 170,000 plus miles on it. It's fun for short trips, and they get a lot of positive attention, probably people pulling up to the light and saying, I'll buy your truck from you.
What use is sell it to one of those people? This is the thing I find fascinating about that 92 SR5 Toyota is the fact that it has such a cult following. I think this is a fantastic sentence. You said you get a lot of positive attention, but it's not what you need. I didn't say supercar. I didn't say sports car. I didn't say anything. I also didn't say Raptor, by the way.
Right.
1992 SR5 Toyota pickup is not some throwdown vehicle, but there is a cult following. The next person at the light that says, I'll buy your truck, I want you to put them on the spot and be like, all right, unlock the door, be like, let's do
this. I've got the title here in the glove box.
Yes, let's make this happen. See how serious they are.
We'll call an Uber.
Yes, I could get myself home.
I'll follow you to your bank.
Let's do it. Yes.
So you could say that he's got the itch, he's a gearhead with money in the bank and nothing good to drive, and so he's looking at this second car slot and thinking about what would work for them. They'll keep the Forester for now and sell the truck, but they don't technically need to sell anything, and they might keep the truck because they can store it somewhere cheaply, or they hope to be able to. The requirements are fairly simple. New or used, doesn't matter. It needs to fit four adults comfortably for a couple of hours.
Okay.
Not like Maybach comfortable, just not painful, and everyone gets their own door.
I really like that description a lot. Everyone has, there's four of you, you all have your own door.
No fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Josh says it needs to also be engaging to drive.
Okay.
He loves a manual, but he thinks that's going to limit things, so he'll accept a good auto.
Okay.
Third, it needs to be able to fit four bikes using a hitch rack or on the roof, and maximum budget is $60,000 out the door. In the bonus points category, extra points for a wagon or hatch, being able to pop the back of the car with access to gear and tools while serving as a seat while you're at the trailhead is ideal.
Okay.
Also, something that's actually fast would be great.
It doesn't just pretend to be fast. It's actually fast.
I want a car that's actually fast. Mm-hmm. He's been piloting bicycles and vehicles under 160 horsepower for a long time, so his bar is low.
Love it.
But something with about 300 horsepower or more would be a big improvement. Oh, and a nice interior would be great, but nothing too precious.
Okay, love it.
The vehicles he's been considering are that V60 T8 Polestar.
Oh, he went big. He went for the Polestar. Yeah,
This is the main car that's pushing his budget up, as high as it is. He loves the look, 400 plus horsepower, and he loves the idea of a plug-in hybrid EV. His hesitations are price, engine complexity, because the Volvo dealership is at least an hour away.
And Volvo uses one engine and just keeps screwing extra technology to it. And the Polestar is like, I'll have all the technology, please. One something from every aisle. Anyway,
He's also never driven one, so he doesn't know quite how fun it is. And he's also considering a Golf R. This is a 2 GTI owner considering a Golf R.
Yeah, he's circled back to the Golf R. I noticed this, yes.
He's kind of running home to mommy, because you know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The newest version is ugly, and he's heard terrible things.
The UI is not good. The UI is not good. So he's looking at the 6th or 7th generation, because the 8th gen has that bad UI. Yeah, for sure.
He said he would buy one without a test drive, but he does admit it feels like a been-there-done-that sort of choice, and he might lose interest quickly.
I think you're right.
I agree. He's also considering a Macan S or a T. He's a huge Porsche fan, despite only ever having driven a Boxster long ago. He says they're great looking, quite reliable, and as far as he's heard, functional shape, great power, good driving dynamics, what is not to like? Mm. But he thinks his perfect car is a BMW 335 wagon, but those don't exist in the US, so he's settling for maybe a 330 wagon with a Dynan chip tune and some sway bars.
You're already tuning the car you don't buy. We all do this.
Tuning
by the
car in your mind.
We always go, well, but what I don't like about that, I could change as soon as I get it. I've done it with all kinds of cars. I have those kind of thoughts. It's bad thoughts. Yeah.
Boy, do I have your perfect car.
I think I do too.
Josh.
I went with car.
Really?
I have comments on his others, but I have a sniper shot for the first time in a long time.
Really? I'm going to work my way there. I have the one car that I think will do it.
Good.
Yes to the Porsches. Go drive the Macan. I think you would really like it. I do think you would take interest in the Genesis GV70, the SUV.
Sure. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
I think you would kind of dig it. You'd dig a lot of things about it.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great Macan alternative. You really, if you're going to drive the Macan, you need to drive the GV70.
I think it's got
to
be
the big engine. Yes, for sure.
Just at least drive it.
Absolutely.
Just pretend like you're interested for a few
minutes.
I'm
here for the guys. Wouldn't it be exactly. awesome if the person at the dealer was like, I've heard of the guys. There's almost no chance, but I just think it'd be hysterical. Anyway, yeah.
But the car that I think is perfect for you is a BMW.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It is the BMW X3 M40i.
Oh, yeah. We liked that a lot.
It's the engine out of the Supra.
Yeah.
At least 382 horsepower, but we know BMW sandbags, so it's really fast.
Yeah, that B58's been in a lot of their product, and it's good in everything they put it
really
in.
Really fast. 2023 model years with under 10,000 miles. Josh, they're just under $60,000. Mm. I found you a 2023 M40i X3 with 8,000 miles for $58,000 in that gorgeous Phytonic blue metallic.
Mm.
It's currently located at Preston Chrysler in Wilmington, Delaware. I used Autotempest to go search for it. But I also noticed you could even get a low mile 2022 X3M for under 60K. That has 473 horsepower out of the 3-liter.
Hmm.
And you can sit on the bumper of your BMW while you gear up for the hike.
Look at you. That's excellent.
Fast.
That's really good stuff.
They're kind of hatchy. They're SUV-ish, but they're kind of wagony, kind of hatchy still. They're lower to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They drive great. The interiors are not hose out, but they're luxurious enough, but they will stand a little bit of abuse, and they're a good size. Everybody gets their own door. You've got at least 300 horsepower, probably 400. You're not going to know what hits you.
Yeah.
And of all that midsize, those midsize SUVs, that is certainly one of the best handling SUVs that Todd and I have driven.
That's really good. I didn't actually end up going there, but that's really, really good. I can't argue that. Josh, I want to talk about that V60 Polestar for a second. Incredibly unique and interesting choice. And as I said earlier, the Volvos are killing it on interior. You'd love being in that vehicle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's high performance enough. It's close. I don't know if it's high performance. You'd have to drive one. The Golf R is interesting and solves your problems, but don't go there. You've already been there enough. Don't go back to Golf R. The Macan is great to drive, but it actually... This is one of those deceiving SUVs. We talked about this before. We all think, all of us, I mean, everybody listening, we all think, well, SUVs have more space. Not really.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how many 5-seat SUVs are pretty cramped in the back. And you know what? I don't even have a whole lot of hatch space. The Macan is kind of in that category.
Mm-hmm.
It has a surprisingly cramped back seat for the fact that you think you're buying an SUV. And the hatch is okay, but it's not like, wow, look at all the space back here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So... I have one answer for you.
Wow.
$60,000. You want everybody to have a door.
Yeah.
You want space for real adults in all four seats. You'd like a hatch to put some gear in. You'd like a nice interior. You want to be able to haul bikes on a hitch. You can do that. You want some actual performance. You've always liked Porsche products. Panamera. They are out there under 60 grand. Like,
are they
crazy.
Really?
You can take your pick on Auto Tempest of which ones you'd like to get. I mean, let's be candid. The newer ones you're going to find for that price point are 2018s, 2019s. Okay? So they're not brand new cars. They have some mileage on them. But I'm scrolling through pages on Auto Tempest right now as I talk. The Panamera. What is your flavor of Panamera?
Sport Turismo is my flavor.
Well, yes. The Sport Turismos aren't this price. Those are the ones with the extra good hatch. I saw one on the way over. That's so great. I'm talking the standard Panamera right now. Yeah. They are such great cars to drive. They are classy. They can do anything. I'm a huge Panamera fan. And I think for what you're looking for, which is fun with usability, with $60,000 in your pocket, I don't think you beat the Panamera for a wagon. Let me put it to you this way.
Ooh.
Josh, you have a 330 BMW you might chip or a Panamera. What's your wagon choice?
Boom. Yeah, Panamera.
Panamera.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I'm just going to, I haven't done a sniper shot in a long time, but I am right there.
Josh, you've got some driving to do. Let us know what you end up getting. If you've got a car conclusion, send it to us. We've got to cover car conclusions again here soon. Mm-hmm. But we really appreciate both of your emails. Write to us. You know where to find us.
Lots of great questions you guys wrote in last time. You wrote in this time. Thank you for always following up with questions when we ask. We really appreciate it. We love having this interaction with you. By the way, you should note that if you are a patron, you have extra access. There's our Discord, which has this whole life of its own, which is awesome. People do extra meetups. They have extra questions. We interact on the Discord as well. Extra questions and topic Tuesdays come up off of Discord. We're always looking for those, so you can always interact with us there. But thank you for responding on Instagram and Facebook. Those are the two major places we ask for questions. We also do look on X, but not as often. There's not as much interaction there. So that's how we're doing this. But I'm going to start with Jeff, who was asking about the Fiesta ST. He said, how do the standard versus the Recaro seats compare in the Fiesta ST? And then bonus question, how do either of them stack up to the cloth seats in the 2018 and up John Cooper Works Mini hatch? Jeff, I have not had the Mini in proximity of the Fiesta to feel like I can properly answer that. But I can say Recaro versus standard seats in the Fiesta ST, we've driven both. I remember not needing the Recaros. The Recaros are pretty narrow. So depending upon who you are shape-wise, we actually heard from some people that the Fiesta ST was one of those ergonomic cars that was actually, in spite of its size, perfect for bigger guys. People that are 5'9 and below tend to not like the Fiesta ST as much. I'm not really sure why, but it has something to do with the way the ergonomics are designed. But we both preferred the standard seats versus the Recaros and the Fiesta ST because they just felt a little bit more, I could go anywhere. I think they would be similar to the ones in the JCW Mini, but again, I haven't been in close enough to proximity to really say for sure.
Got a cool question from Geese1RBM, who keeps hearing the term software-defined vehicles.
Mm.
What exactly does that mean, and is it antithetical to driving enthusiast as it sounds?
It does sound like, you don't care about me at all, do you?
Yep. No, you're right. It just means robots. It just means a code stack. And that means the disconnect between the physical aspects of the car and the digital aspects of the car. Ideally, a full software-defined vehicle would mean things are fully disconnected and you can't find to deploy the wing through the touchscreen menu. It would be something separate. But ideally, a software-defined vehicle controls all the parts of a vehicle's performance, all the aspects of a vehicle that now can be improved or changed by over-the-air updates. So you want to change the suspension settings, or you want to add full self-driving capability, or now you want to add, think of a cool thing to add. For enthusiasts, what has revolutionized things started with GM's MagnaRide. Being able to select from comfort to sport, and the car changes personality and it's actually good. Well, that's a good thing for enthusiasts. Now that's a switch and it's a physical thing controlled by a digital element. But ultimately, where things are going is car companies being able to add features over the air. Tesla has pioneered this like crazy. But it's also not specific to EVs necessarily. But being able to add features to a car, or you subscribe to seats,
I subscribed to a steering wheel.
It looked like, you know, just a nub, and now it's a steering wheel, and because I subscribed or something. Stupid.
You subscribe to your steering wheel. Oh no. New from BMW, subscription steering. Don't be driven around. You can subscribe. Subscribe for more.
Oh man. See, and I regret giving BMW the idea, but still, I'm sure they've already thought of it because they invented like subscribe to seat heaters. Like, don't do that. So I see it as a way for enthusiasts to subscribe and car manufacturers to make something a little bit more cheaply. They won't pass the cost along to us, but no, still they'll build something and can be transformed because we do like cars that can be transformed from one thing to another. That is exciting and interesting. The C8 Corvette is a great example.
Mm.
Boy, is that an excellent road trip car. Also, I can track it.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
That's amazing in a sports car that fits people, the world's most compromised car. But cars that we find, wow, you can change this. The Mercedes suspension settings are excellent. The way it transforms a car's character and personality means that us enthusiasts can have an all-in-one kind of car.
That broad skill set.
Kind of do everything, but I don't need it to be a hardcore track car. I also don't need it to be the hardcore commuter car. That's what this technology will hopefully continue to give us, but there is no substitute for Porsche. You knew I was going to say that, but for the car that is so focused and is so good. The suspension setting is one setting.
Mm.
The gearbox is just the gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
The steering doesn't change for your speed.
When it somebody nails that, it is special. And that I feel like that's also a dying art.
The throttle response, it's a cable. Mm-hmm. It'll do what it does.
I think it's a dying art. I think it's one of those things that's going away because we can change everything digitally.
Yeah.
That actually being able to properly tune a car with mechanical things and washers in the suspension and we'd like made it work and you're getting going, yeah, you really did nail this. That's really rare anymore.
It's rare and it's also rare for just the car to be the car.
Yeah, you're so right. Yes.
You all know that I hate reversible anything.
Mm-hmm.
The desk transforms as your kid grows. No, it doesn't. It's hitting the dump or the garage sale.
That's very funny.
The jacket, flip it inside out. Your belt, your shoes, your wallet. What? No, stop it with the reversible anything. People keep trying to do this and convince me like, no, it's plaid on the inside. Porsche just has the new turbo look merchandise. It's plaid on the inside. You can wear that. No.
If I want plaid, I'll just buy plaid.
That's what Luke is trying to do with Genesis Magma brand.
Oh, interesting.
He's trying to reverse, trying to wear the fur on the outside. Well, fur grows on the outside. That's how the animals wear it. We sort of flopped that when we
killed bear and turned them inside out to survive.
Huh.
Anyway, Andrew's writing in and saying,
I don't know where to leave.
I'm just leaving it is where I'm going. Andrew's writing in on Facebook. Good question here. He says, for those looking for or needing an automatic, is it worth getting an automatic in the standard enthusiast or sports cars that most people say should only be had with a manual? He's talking about things like the 86 or the 996 or 997 911, or what about the current WRX in CVT form? Andrew, I want to clarify this. Look, the internet wants to give the impression I'm gonna include Paul and I, the collective pool of car enthusiasts on the internet. We all apparently have one chant that we agree on. We don't agree on anything else, but the one chant we agree on is everything's better with a manual.
Yeah.
And while I mostly ascribe to that, the thing that gets left behind is this suggestion that if it's a car that comes in an auto, it stopped being fun with an auto.
Which is untrue.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
I am a guy that loves a manual transmission. I generally prefer any car that comes both ways. I prefer it with a manual. But a good car with good balance is fun, full stop. When you're in whatever gear you're talking about, they're the same car. If I'm in third in a PDK in a Cayman or third in a manual in a Cayman, they are currently identical. It's the same experience.
Yeah.
They turn the same. They accelerate roughly the same. I mean, the mechanics of a good car transcend the transmission. If you prefer the interaction of a manual, please buy the manual because that's going to make auto manufacturers know there's still an audience and keep making them. So don't buy an auto if you like manuals. Don't do that, okay? Mm-hmm. But on the flip side is if you want an automatic and you prefer an automatic or you need one, don't avoid a fun car because you're like, well, but isn't that supposed to be bought with a manual? I don't know. Are you buying it? Buy it. Buy it with an auto.
Buy it.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. Eric P's got a Facebook question that is very poignant and a moment in time talking about the Port of Baltimore. And at this point in time, this week, the Francis Scott Key Bridge has collapsed after being hit by a giant cargo ship.
Unbelievable.
And we are mourning the loss of those who lost their lives. That's
a horrible, it's horrifying,
tragic
video. It really is. Yeah.
But he's asking, because this is a major port where cars from around the world arrive, will it be affected by this bridge collapse? Mm. And do we think it'll have a major impact on vehicle sales, or will it recover rather quickly? Actually, Eric, funny you ask, because I looked into this, and most of the vehicles that go in and out are at Sparrow Point, just to the southeast of that bridge. BMW, Volkswagen Group, Mercedes uses it. Amazon has two distribution warehouses. So does Home Depot, a lot of other companies. It's not a large peninsula, but it's big enough that I'm hoping that that disruption won't be too major for that area. But it's still going to be a giant disruption. But already, of course, shipping companies around the world are rethinking because of global events going on. They're rethinking where cars will go in and out of. There, I'm sure we'll feel it. We'll see somewhat of a, wow, okay, stuff isn't available. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think the volume of cars coming in and out of the U.S. will still hopefully provide not too big of a ripple effect, not too big of a shockwave there. But it's horrific news. It's not just cars. It's everything. I mean, Port of Baltimore is a huge, major port. And crazy news, but moment in time here.
Color Cartel is writing on Instagram and saying he was recently in a rental minivan and got T-boned. Wasn't an intersection, just a freak event. He walked away from a rather violent hit about 15 minutes later, and then he started thinking because he owns an Elise. He said, if I'd been in my Elise or a Porsche 924s like I used to have, or even a motorcycle, he said this would have been a totally different situation. He's seen other accidents as well. It has him wondering about small cars in an accident. He even notes the Gunther Works that had a rollover this week at Laguna Seca, which was also really scary. He said he's wary now of commuting in, I hate this sentence, easily collapsible cars. How safe are cars like the Amira or the Cayman, and how do we research how safe a vehicle is? I mean, there's two things. There's the NTSB, all of their safety ratings do matter. And I hate to say what I'm about to say next. The bigger the vehicle, the more likely you are to survive the crash. And this is why we see 16-year-old drivers who can't even find the edges of the giant SUV or truck they're in trying to navigate because the parents thought, I'll put them in the biggest thing possible.
Yeah.
And if you have a big vehicle versus my small little Lotus Elise, I will lose. And that is a horrifying thought. Elon Musk went so far as to say, if you're driving a Cybertruck, you will win, which is just the worst possible way to sell a car. But this is the reality. This is the reason so many things have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger is because we all equate big with safety. And in a crash, that can be true. But in every other way, it can be worse. Let's you know what we should do? Let's go smaller and avoid crashes. How about that?
All the That's events a crazy leading idea. Up to it. Let's rethink that.
Let's do things. But anyway, so the thing is, man, I do think about this in my Elise. I do. My ankles are in the crash structure. They are, okay? And it's one of those things that I think is utterly personal. Where's the line for you personally? Are you willing to take the risk and be observant and know that there will always be things beyond your control? Or do you want to drive something bigger and sacrifice those options and fun on the possibility of worst case scenario? And this is a total headspace thing, and I am not throwing judgment at all, but I had to make decisions about a decade ago. Did I want to be glass half empty or glass half full? And I just decided, look, there's a bunch of stuff beyond my control that is dark and terrible, and I can focus on that, and I would be a much darker person now if I had, or I can look at all of the blessings and positives in my life. And I've had to apply that across the board. Now, I've been in moments in my Elise with my son driving along beside the wheel of an 18-wheeler and thought, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You got to be aware.
Yeah.
But I keep driving that car because I love it.
And to everybody, please don't hang out next to 18-wheelers. No. Get past them.
Yes.
Because I see so many mindless people. They're not even thinking what they're doing. And you're in their blind spot. Just get away. Leave those guys alone.
Yep.
They're operating heavy machinery. Please
they are.
Give them the space. I was thinking about that in our series with our sports cars from the past, because that 83 928 has no safety anything. It has belts.
You don't have,
and it's not
an ABS, do you?
No ABS.
Yeah.
No airbags. No nothing on that car. And it, there was one instance where I locked him up and was like, oh yeah, 83. But for the most part, we did a lot of miles.
Yeah, we did.
10,000 plus miles in both of those cars. Your Z car and my
928. All over the country,
Looking at the steering wheel going, okay, so this is a vintage car. There's no airbag there. Later 928s actually did.
Yeah, sure.
The first one that I had definitely did have an airbag, but, or no, it didn't. It didn't. It was in 89 because mine was in 88. Anyway.
My 91 300ZX twin turbo that I had on that series had the, I'm not kidding, optional airbag. It was the first year it was offered, and it was an option, and it had one. No passenger, but had the optional airbag in 91.
That also brings up the age question of airbags, because that was a 33-year-old airbag in that thing. Is it
33-year-old explosive? That seems like fun. Let's play with that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. How far do you want to go down this rabbit trail? There's no good news at the end of it. Yeah.
David Chrisman 1 asks, if we had to sell the Cayman and the Elise, what would we replace them with? Mm. David, if you're buying, we're flying, because you know, I want a GT4. That's what I really want.
That's very funny.
I think, Todd, I don't know if you'd ever sell the Elise. I think it'd just be an ad for you.
I would prefer to add, because that the longer I have that car and the more we drive other things, I've said this before, the more I'm aware of how much of a cul-de-sac it is. Mm-hmm. There isn't a... From an Elise, I'm going to get it. There's not an end to that sentence. So I would love to keep it. But look, nothing is forever. And so I'm willing to entertain.
Got this other car question from Vampirite asking me, how's the camera car holding up these days? Mm. How many miles are on the hard-driven Ford? There's only about 145,000 miles on it. It does get driven hard. Took it to Moab for my birthday. And you and I took it mountain biking up Fire Road. And it did great. It's just so awesome. It's a lumbering beast, and it's just such a great road trip car, and it just swallows all the gear, everything.
It is amazing,
it's such a great shoot truck for us, and it's the tailgate's all rusty, and the paint's peeling off now, and the undercarriage is rusty, but it runs great, and I keep the fluids changed. I keep on top of the maintenance, and it's, you know, I could love it more, but it's also kind of for work truck kind of purposes, though it's awesome. I really love it. My dad really loved it. And I always think of him when I'm driving it. So it's part of the family. I don't know if I'll ever let it go, but you know, it's not efficient. It's not fast, but man, is it great when you're cruising. It's just so great.
I love it. I love it. Landon has a, it's not a track daily crush. It's a 3-car dream car question, but it's not big enough to be a topic Tuesday. He says, for track use only, money, no object. What 3 cars? And then he says, this is the throwdown. Why wouldn't you pick, apparently you've picked, Landon, the Lotus Exige Cup 430.
That's heck a of track a car. Weapon.
2016 Dodge Viper ACR.
Oh my God.
And the McLaren Senna.
Whoa.
Why not those 3? And I see those 3 and I like them, okay? But I have 2 that would be alts. I would stay with the Lotus Exige Cup 430. That is a ton of power in that car, and of course I love that chassis anyway. But the Viper ACR and the McLaren Senna, both of which are awesome, and I can't take anything away from them. However, I would swap them out for BAC Mono.
Mm.
That's a very unique experience. It's not the based on what I understand, it's not the best track experience ever, but that is a very unique experience. So BAC Mono and the current GT3 RS.
I would like a GT3 RS badly.
I mean, you could go Cayman Cup car, I thought, but I'm trying to stay stuff that I think you could take on the road.
Yeah, I would like that, but I've really eyeballed Praga cars, PragaGlobal.com.
Oh, yeah, those are crazy.
Bohema,
you're right.
Yeah. Track car.
Yeah. If you're going money, no object, you're right. You're in a good place there. That's a good place.
The Pragas are so crazy looking. 700 brake horsepower. Whew. Crazy. That's Romain Grosjean is the official driver, official sponsor for that car, and definitely a BAC Mono. Definitely a different driving experience.
Eli Miller has a question that relates to actually something we've talked about a little bit before, but let's see if I can touch on it real quick. He says, obviously, EVs are getting all the discussion as alternative fuels. Mm-hmm. It's EVs, EVs, EVs. But he said he doesn't feel like that the most of the country either has the infrastructure or will be able to get it very easily. But he feels like, wait a minute, whatever happened to hydrogen? Because you could put hydrogen at every gas station.
It was like, over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, everyone.
And then you could retrofit everything with hydrogen. They emit less, et cetera, long ranges. All the cars that have been tested on it seem to have worked pretty well. He said, why is Toyota the only one in the game? What is he missing? Eli, I think what you're missing is ease of use. Okay? Mm. I want you to think about the gas you use, the gasoline you use when you fill your car, is an inert liquid. I mean, yes, it explodes if you light it on fire, but the it's a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
You pour it in at room temperature at normal pressures. If you can fit a nozzle in a hole, then all of a sudden you're filling your car with juice. Okay, EVs are the same thing, but they're even easier. Can you take this plug and fit it in that hole? Done.
It only goes one way.
Exactly. Hydrogen cars are not that easy. hydrogen cars require proper testing. They require pressurization mm-hmm. in the car and mm-hmm. in the station.
Yep.
The actual ways you connect up the nozzles have got to be done just right because of the pressurization. That what you're doing here is you're relying on the average person. Now, these are the same average people, by the way, we've all seen the videos, who drive away with the nozzle in the car until it has, this is why they all have a breakpoint.
Those are the best videos.
Every single nozzle at a gas station has a breakaway point.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do that if this wasn't, I hate to say it, common. Okay? If it happened once in 1,000, you know, years, they wouldn't have a breakpoint because that's never going to happen. That person's ridiculous.
Humans can't possibly be that
they
stupid.
They all have breakpoints. So the point is, the person that would do that, drive away with the nozzle in their car and break it off the gas station, you're trusting that person with pressurized things that have got to be done exactly right according to procedure. I think that is actually the biggest struggle to hydrogen in passenger cars, though I think it could be completely surmounted on heavy vehicles. Like, what if all the semis were running on this? Those guys have got to have a CDL and they got to pay more attention anyway.
Yeah, true.
We could do it for them. They're already paying more attention. Why not?
Guys, thank you for all your questions. If you want to get on track with us, hookedondriving.com for a track day near you. Todd's going to be at Laguna April 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be at New Jersey Motorsports Park for a Cars and Coffee from 9 to 11 a.m. on April 7th. New Jersey Motorsports
Craziness.
Park. Come see me and say hello. Looking forward to next time as always. Cheers, everyone.